This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Listen, transfer news has started. The Prem is starting to build up again, and Manchester City, richest little crowd around, have completed a 62.8 million record signing of midfielder from Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, 62.8 million.
Yeah,
that's a record signing.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, he's a midfielder.
It's a club record signing
because they need another midfielder.
Yeah,
they need more players, don't they?
He's 23. Rodri joins on a 5-year deal, and City boss Guardiola's second signing of the summer after defender Angelino rejoined for PSV.
Yeah. Anyway, join us now is David Walker, Man City blogger at Red. But never read.
You said dead, but never
I
read.
I said
didn't
dead,
you?
But never read earlier on. I had sad news in my head.
Dead, but never read.
David Walker. Just listen, David. Did they need another midfielder?
Most definitely did. Your sarcasm aside, gentlemen.
Yes.
We needed this particular midfielder because he's not a Kevin De Bruyne. He's not a David Silva. He's not a Phil Foden. He is the long-term replacement for Fernandinho. Basically, the defensive midfielder that we haven't had, or we certainly wouldn't have once Fernandinho hangs up his boots. You made a play about him being a record signing. He is our record signing. Yeah. I reckon if you can have a £62 million bargain, he's it, in the way that Aymeric Laporte was a £57 million bargain and Kevin De Bruyne was a £54 million bargain.
Right, okay. Well,
putting it in perspective, you've got 16 or 17 signings well above that value, you know, in world football.
Yeah.
And in terms of record signings, Liverpool, United, Bayern Munich, Chelsea, they've all signed players for more money than that, who probably haven't turned out as well.
Well, David, as you said, he's a record signing, much lower than the rivals across the city there. Does that show that the blue side is smarter than the red side?
I think undoubtedly. I mean, yeah. City nowadays, I mean, we've had this thing, I know you guys were joking about, you know, richest club around, but only you can only spend certain things. You can't just spend what your owner has in his bank account because you've got this fatuous financial fair play rule.
It's in the back of the van, David. It's in the back of the van.
If you could spend all the money he had, he'd buy about four other clubs.
they're all under all the money's under the settee, under the cushion. It's a blooming big settee, I can tell.
Yeah.
Now, what happens nowadays, City, they will put a value on a player. You know, they have a perceived value of a player. Mm. And if it goes above that, they walk away. And that's their prerogative, it's the selling club's prerogative to say, well, we want this. I mean, this is the situation with Maguire. We walked away from Sanchez, Fred, Jorginho, which with hindsight have been three big ticks in the box.
Yeah.
But this guy, Rodri, he had a set buyout clause. It's been basically nailed on that we were buying him for maybe 6 months. You can imagine Pep Guardiola, the best coach in the world. He's done his homework. This guy is phenomenal. He's got a 91% pass accuracy in La Liga, which is one of the best leagues in the world. He's 23, 22, whatever.
23.
Yeah. He's supposed to be the successor to Sergio Busquets in the Spanish national team. And he's got all the attributes that Busquets has at that age. I think he's 6'2". He certainly brings some height to a position which we haven't had. And that's one of our weaknesses, one of our few weaknesses.
Yeah, we haven't you've got a lot quite a small team, defending. Haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. So when we're in dead ball situation, corner kicks, free kicks, sometimes that's our Achilles heel. But no, this is the signing that most Manchester City fans wanted above all else this summer because it is, in inverted commas, the problem position because Fernandinho, bless his heart, he's 35 next birthday. He's still phenomenal, but, you know, father time waits for nobody.
You just mentioned Harry Maguire. Looking at the situation that happened with John Stones with England, you know, I mean, I feel for him because he is a good footballer, but I still don't know whether he's an out-and-out centre-half. Would Harry Maguire... Does Man City fans really want Harry Maguire?
I think the majority would welcome him. I don't think we have a problem. I think we can see that he's a good player. He's a guy who can bring the ball out from the back. He had an excellent game against us in the penultimate fixture of last season. We do need to be cognizant of the fact you need homegrown, you need English contingent of players, and why not have one of the best centre-halves in the game? But again, it comes down to value for money as perceived by City. City fans, I think everybody would be pretty content, 65 million, possibly pushing it to 70, which is the rumoured figure. But I don't think many City fans would be happy if we went and spent £90 million on Harry Maguire. No disrespect to the guy, but it's not exactly a problem position. I know Company's gone, which is a great sadness, but we've got Laporte, we've got Stones, we may still have Otamendi. Depends if Otamendi wants to stay, if he thinks he's going to get more game time. And we've also got a guy called Eric Garcia, who not many people would have heard of, who used to be the captain at Barcelona's academy. We nicked him from Barcelona. And this kid, I think he's coming up 18. He is a future star. And you just got to be aware that some of these guys, these youngsters, can break through, mature very quickly. And you just got to balance that about, do we want to spend 90 million on somebody when we're pretty well stocked in that position?
They only turned Man United down for Maguire yet,
haven't
they?
70 million, yeah.
Man City, David. What I'm trying to say is this. If it's Man City going in for 70, would they take that? Do you know what I mean?
They don't care who they take it from,
yeah,
do
but
they?
Yeah, but I think they do. They might do.
No, why?
They might care. Man City are Man City. And Man United at the moment are Man United.
What, you're saying that sell one of their best players to a lesser club?
Yeah. They
really?
Might be thinking. No. Well, you know, sometimes they don't think that, don't they?
Yeah, maybe. What do you think, David?
Well, without being tongue-in-cheek here, Man United, Leicester will probably see Man United as more of a rival than Man City.
Oh, I see. You know, right,
You're looking at... Well, looking at a top six position, Leicester, with the greatest respect, are not going to win the title for a long, long time to come. But Brendan Rodgers, as much as I detest him from his Liverpool days, has them playing a good style of football already, and they've got some good young talents there. I think Leicester would know that United would be more inclined to push the boat out because their need is greater.
Okay.
They're desperate to rebuild at Old Trafford.
Yes.
And I think that could be in their thinking. And if United want to spend 90 million on Harry Maguire, then, you know, that's their business. It's not Man City's, and we will walk away.
Are you saying that would pretty much be Man City's cap around the 65, 70 million?
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that's fair value because you could say Van Dijk went to 75 and, you know, he's turned out well and the transfer market and values have moved on. But it's almost like art, you know, you pay what you think it's worth. And if you don't think it's worth that, you walk away.
Yeah. Who else do you think they're looking to sign, Man City, for pre-season?
We're looking at a guy from Juventus, Jao Cancelo, who is a Portuguese right-back. As well as Kyle Walker's done in his two seasons, let's face it, he hasn't done too badly, two Premier Leagues, two League Cups and an FA Cup. There was a bit of a dip in his form last year, which could have been down to a bit of fatigue because he did the World Cup, he came straight back. Good competition in all positions is great. This guy, Cancelo, is a Portuguese international. I dare say Bernardo Silva can give Pep the rundown. He's an impressive guy. Again, I think he's around the 24, 25 mark. We're not buying 28, 29. We're buying players who are good value and got some longevity in the leg. So, fullback Cancelo, we're keen to get him. And again, you know, there's this centre-back position which will we or will we not address it. But once again, in the way that last season, we only bought Mahrez in the summer window, there is a degree of being quite frugal in what we're doing. We're talking fine-tuning here. We're not talking about, you know, a refit of four or five players. Sometimes it's the players that you can actually retain are as important as the players that you want to acquire. And if we can keep Gundogan and Sane on long-term contracts, bearing in mind Kevin De Bruyne missed at least two-thirds of last season, I mean, I wouldn't say he's a new signing, but he's a talent who was missing for a lot of last season. And then, of course, you have the enigma, which is Benjamin Mendy at left-back. Now, on his day, he's one of the best left-backs in the world. But mostly since he's joined us, he's been left back on the treatment table. Now, if that guy's fit and firing, that is virtually like a new signing and brings a new dimension down the left wing. So City fans and City themselves, you know, were not being complacent in any way. Pep's a perfectionist, but to do a three-peat, if we can win three Premier Leagues on the bounce, which has only been done by Man United in modern times, that would be one hell of a feat, and it's one that is attainable.
What about David? Just obviously, Phil Foden has come through the academy. It's fantastic. You know, I know that Man City have got an amazing academy there. Any more stars coming, homegrown talent that may get into that first team?
Well, Foden, as you say, he's the big ticket, and with David Silva saying this is his last season at the Etihad, there's obviously a succession planning going on there. You can see that already. Mm. I mentioned the guy Eric Garcia. He's originally from Barcelona, but he's been with the academy for a couple of seasons.
Oh, is he? Okay.
So he is the next big hope. Other than that, there's probably a multitude of players which I'm blissfully unaware. But the way City work their academy, yes, we want players to come through and play first team and be in our squad for years to come. But there is that element of, you know, good housekeeping. If you bring enough players through who you can sell on for 6, 7, 5, 8 million, whatever, it's keeping it ticking over. It's meeting the financial fair play criteria. I mean, take Angelino. He was with the academy. He went out on loan to various loans. He went to PSV. We sold him for, I think it was for about 4.5 million last summer.
Yeah.
He had an outstanding season at PSV. We had a buyback clause. We're buying him back for about 5.3. So on the face of it, we've lost £500,000. But the guy has had exposure to top-flight football in the Netherlands. Mm. He's impressed people. The rumours were that PSG were coming in for him at 20 million quid. Now, we bought him back for a quarter of that, another product of the academy. Yeah. And this is a kid who now he's proven himself on a bigger stage. He's now back in the squad. He's here on a four-year deal, and he'll give us a bit more strength and depth.
I just wonder, though, David, whether we ever see the likes of... OK, I'm switching to Man United here now, but sort of academies, you know, where they picked up Beckham, was obviously an Essex boy,
yeah,
where they picked him up so young and at such an early period of time, and he goes and lives up there. I mean, my son's at the Spurs Academy, but I'm just wondering whether Man City look further afield in this country rather than some of the other countries?
City's Academy is... Whether it's the best is debatable, because Chelsea's has been very accomplished, and obviously the proof of that will be in the pudding if they do have their transfer embargo maintained and Frank Lampard has to, you know, rely on some of the youngsters, coming through.
Yeah.
But City, they have a global scouting system. It's very hot in South America.
Right.
And they do look to acquire youngsters very early. Mm. And then if they get them early enough, they meet this homegrown criteria, even though they're not English nationals. So I think they're looking at all aspects. They're looking globally and they're looking within England. But talent is talent, and City will seek to acquire it.
I think it should be a new rule. I think you should have to take a certain amount of players.
Well, we've been saying that for
it really should
for,
be.
For months,
it should
we?
Be.
You know.
And then English football can get great.
But this is what I'm saying. That, you know, I've been raving about Phil Foden for quite some time, and he's just sort of, you know, sort of broke into the first team this year, really. Mm. And, yeah, listen.
Should be a rule, shouldn't it?
Yeah. We could talk about this
for
ages.
Do you not agree, David?
Sorry, say again.
Well, this should be a rule, shouldn't it? There should be you should have to take a certain amount of youth players through every year, every season.
It's a nice ideal, but ultimately, it's like in life. If you're good enough, you get the chances. If you're not good enough, why take something? And I don't mean this, you know, to be disrespectful, but why take something substandard just to meet a quota?
Yeah,
that's not the way football works. It's not the way.
The amount of money that's involved now in football is incredible, isn't it? You're right.
I still don't want to see. cup finals and stuff like that where there's no English players on the pitch out of 22 players.
Well, this is the irony, isn't it? We talk about the lack of English talent coming through, and yet, remarkably, our national team has actually been on an upward trajectory with Gareth Southgate.
Yeah, they've
still got a number of players who aren't in first team football,
and they've all been pretty much young players.
Yeah.
Anyway, David, wonderful as always. Thanks ever so much for your time, David Walker.
Thanks,
there,
man, thanks, David.
Thank you, Man City blogger at Red But Never Red.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
We're going to come back and have a little chat about Banksy,
yeah,
because we're going to find out,
yeah,
who Banksy is.
Yeah. Right? Oh, I mean, I'm dying to know.
You really do want to know.
I really do want to know. But let's talk about musicals, shall we?
Yes, please do.
Let's go. Let's talk about the musicals. Before we talk to our guest, I'm a great big fan of musicals, as you know.
Yes.
But I'm not a fan of modern musicals. Let's talk to Lucy Bardrick. Or Badrick. Is it Bardrick, Lucy?
It's Bardrick.
Bardrick, yes. There we are. Lucy, you're a film and stage assistant, choreographer. Wouldn't we talk about Britain's favourite movie musicals? Now, what I'd like to ask you is this. In what way are we talking about them? Is that modern ones or the old ones that I love?
Do you know what? It's a bit of everything. Because obviously, what we've been used to recently is, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody and all of these new ones that have come out, which you've just said, not particularly a fan of.
Right.
But it's the classics as well.
I am a big, big, huge fan of the classics. Yeah. Now, I'm talking High Society, I'm talking Carousel, Oklahoma.
Yes.
Those West Side Story, those are my favourites.
Why are you not a fan of the new ones?
I just don't think they're as good.
What ones have you seen?
But movie musicals, there aren't that many new ones to be talking about.
Okay, what about Mamma Mia?
No, absolutely not.
What did you think, Lucy, of the modern ones?
Okay, well, I was really fortunate just recently to work as assistant choreographer on Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
Okay.
And I have to admit, like, my favourites have always been the classics. I was brought up on The Sound of Music, The King and I, Rodgers and Hammerstein. Absolutely love them. I watch White Christmas every single year.
So
I
do
just
I,
love
Lucy.
It.
So
right,
do
okay.
I. Yeah.
Okay. So when I was asked to do Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, I thought, right, well, this is going to be interesting. First of all, I didn't think they would make another one.
Right.
But second of all, I thought, you know what? It gives me the chance to work with some ridiculously amazing people in
of
the
course.
Industry.
Yes.
And it was also written by some incredible people in the industry.
Okay.
Couple that with ABBA's music, a lot of which in this film people didn't know.
Yeah.
A lot of the songs people didn't know were even theirs. So it was actually one of the most amazing experiences and films that I've worked on.
Yeah.
And I actually think the result was amazing because it's silly.
Well,
it's
okay.
silly.
So I'll be honest, Lucy.
I haven't seen
Mamma Mia
or Mamma Mia. And that's why I asked you. Because you
no,
just...
very
Lucy, let me just tell you something. He poo-poos it away because he didn't come out of bed until 1982. He stayed in bed. And he's not seen the modern ones. Now, my daughter, at the moment, she's been to see this show about four or five times. This show six.
Right.
And absolutely, it has changed her life because, you know, she was into...
But the theatre.
She wasn't into drum and bass and stuff like that. But what I'm saying is this show at the moment, and I know that the girls from Six went on Britain's Got Talent or X Factor and done their performance as a guest.
Right.
Yeah.
And have you seen it, by the way?
No, I haven't.
This is drum and bass,
it's,
right?
It's about Henry VIII's wives.
Oh, I've seen clips of it.
And it's fantastic.
Oh, and, right. Wait, and they're all standing in line, don't they, singing?
Yes.
Like Anna Cleves and...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And, and she's taken my wife to it and she absolutely loves it. What I'm saying is she wasn't into drum and bass. What I'm saying is she was only into music, listening to music online. She's got into musical theatre because of this show.
Is it drum and bass?
Right.
Though?
No, it's not because I'm...
Why do you keep saying drum and bass?
What I'm saying is she used to listen to rubbish music on her headphones.
Right, okay.
She's suddenly
and
this sees
is,
this
she's getting
this
a bit
show.
Cultured, you mean?
Exactly. And it's
sorry, Lucy, we're having a row.
No, you carry on.
While you're on the phone.
It's got what I'm saying is it's got her, a 14-year-old girl,
right.
into musical theatre.
That is a good thing. That
and
good thing.
That's what I'm trying to say. So this sort of modern way of doing it is introducing a new style, isn't it?
It is. And also, like, musicals are for everyone. And I do think it is important to keep things like... Everything is about energy. It's important to have that new energy. It's important to have that new creativity in the industry. Else, where do you go? Like, and it's great that the classics, they're never going to die. Like, we're always going to go back and revisit those. But I think some of these new musicals, like you said, are bringing so much young energy and passion and enthusiasm into the industry. It can only be a good thing.
Now, listen, Lucy, we've got the list in front of us here. And I'm quite annoyed here. Britain's favourite songs from musicals, okay?
Yeah.
I'm very annoyed by this. Number one is Bohemian Rhapsody. That's not a song from a musical. What are you talking about, people?
But bear in mind...
it's not a song from a musical.
Bear in mind, you're a massive Freddie Mercury fan.
I am a massive Queen fan.
But you...
I wouldn't put that in the... Number one...
Because it's a, this...
I know.
Look, here we go again, Lucy, right? My daughter...
No, you carry on. You're like... It's like you're married.
I know. But my daughter didn't know anything about Queen, really,
yeah,
until she saw the film, became a massive Queen fan. I mean, literally, that's all I hear.
Yeah.
Apart from Panic at the Disco, that's all I hear. I hear Queen coming
out.
So what I'm saying is, it's introduced a younger audience to some of these songs.
I understand it, but let me ask you this, Lucy. Let me ask you this. I mean, I am disgusted by this. There is only one reference to my favourite musicals, and that is Gene Kelly, and he's at number three, dancing to Singing in the Rain. That is the
only
one.
Well, there you go. You'd be very happy.
Where's
number three?
Where's Fred Astaire and Eleanor Powell in the wonderful Broadway melody of 1940? There's the most fantastic dance sequence in that.
Absolutely. But this is the thing. I think you've got the classics in there. You've got some of the classics in there. And let you know, Gene Kelly is number three. And obviously, I mean, I just think he's a total rock star and will
Should
always
be number one.
Right.
Yes.
Right. But people, you know, people still, it shows that people still appreciate that that genre as well as all the new stuff. And I do think it's true. I think, you know, the new musicals have introduced people to the music of that generation.
Yeah.
I do workshops now. Mamma Mia, here we go again, for example. I do workshops for young ones who'd never heard the ABBA music before, for example. And I'm surprised. Like, it has surprised me how much they love it.
Yes.
And if it introduces them to music, if it introduces them to dance and performing and how magical that can be and how it can transform you to a different place, give you that escapism, then, oh my goodness, yeah, let's keep making more.
But John, Britain's top dance routines for musicals, your one's in there, John. Gene Kelly,
number three.
Dancing, Singing in the Rain. I've Had the Time of My Life.
Oh, God.
Dirty Dancing is in at number one.
Unbelievable.
Now, I suppose we always think about the one where, you know, the girl runs up to Patrick Swayze and he carries her.
I
actually saw two people do this Saturday night. I was doing a gig and I saw two fellas try to do it. And the one who was running up was twice the size of the fella who was meant to be catching him. They both ended up on the floor, and I think the fella on the bottom broke his ankle.
Wow.
Because
what was that?
It was at a gig Saturday night, and it was unbelievable.
What was he mucking about? They were mucking about.
Of course they were mucking about.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, God, that's what I'm telling you. So he ran up and jumped on it. But what I'm saying is that has been the highlight.
How can
that
be number one, though? It's ridiculous. What about Shall We Dance from The King and I? With Yul Brynner and Deborah Carr.
Yep.
Where's that, for goodness sake?
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter because that's in my top 10,
I completely
agree with you. but you can't deny the fact that everybody knows that iconic lift in Dirty Dancing. Everybody wants it to be in their wedding dance.
Yeah,
everybody wants to have a go when they're out at a party and maybe slightly worse for wear.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't deny that either.
So we've obviously just had the Elton John film out. We've had the Bohemian Rhapsody, let's say, about Freddie Mercury.
And top two.
And let's just sort of say, stars whose life we'd like to see in a musical. In at number one at the moment, we spoke about John Newer.
Yeah.
Amy Winehouse.
Yeah. Now, that wouldn't be a very happy musical, would
it? Not really.
My goodness me.
And I think her dad would be in all of it.
Yes, he would. Yes. Number two, Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
And Deck,
number three. Seriously?
You want a musical about Ant and Deck?
Can I just say, like, my idol at number five is George Michael, okay?
Yeah.
It would make a great musical. Ant and Deck at number three. What's that all
ridiculous
about?
I love them. I absolutely love them. I worked with them on their Saturday Night Takeaway Arena
tour.
They've been in the industry for years. We can hark back to the Biker Grove. It could be genius. You can't deny that.
I suppose it could. Lucy, you must come in and see us.
Do you know what?
Come on the show.
The terrible thing is that Ant and Deck had the raving up with us because we got on Top of the Pops with our football song and they didn't get on the ball. They actually said to us, how comes you're doing Top of the Pops this week and we're not?
Yeah, it's true. That's
a funny
true
one. Lucy, wonderful to have you on.
Thanks, Lucy.
We'll definitely get you back on to have a chat a bit more about this. this. Lucy Bardrick, film and stage assistant, choreographer.
Wasn't she lovely?
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Let's start off with the sad news about John McCruick.
Yeah.
He was on our show 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Absolute legend.
And every time he was just a giver.
Yeah.
Wasn't he? And he was wonderful.
And we said that you weren't sort of on your toes when you interviewed him.
Oh, could you?
Because, you know, you could have had a row with him.
Yeah, you could have done.
But I think he knew coming on our show it was going to be fun. And it wasn't going to be as straight-laced as most interviews that he would have been doing.
We have another guest. We have another guest that comes on, Richard Fitzwilliams.
Yes.
Who's a very posh man.
He's a royal journalist.
He's a royal journalist. And he's another one. I mean, I don't agree with a lot of the stuff that he says, but he's such a great character. And he's got this kind of way about him that you know that even if you say something to him, he says, no, of course not. What are you talking about? Or whatever it is. It's all great, and it's all in good,
good jest. Yeah.
And he's just a wonderful character.
Do you think that we are lacking characters like that on TV now?
Yeah, they're all fence sitters now, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're all fence sitters.
So we referenced, listen, we like Gary Lineker, but he's getting $1.75 million a year from the BBC, hosting Match of the Day. And like we said, anybody could host Match of the Day. You're not gonna not watch it, are you?
No, because you're watching it to see what team's played that day.
And you, like you said, you get in from a gig or whatever, you fast forward the Gary Lineker bits.
Always.
Sometimes I want to see what Alan Shearer says.
I pretty much
switch off when Danny Murphy talks.
Yeah, I must agree. All right. I like Ian Wright, though.
Ian Wright's great.
I like Wrighty when he talks.
Wears terrible clothes.
Absolutely. It's amazing. I don't see that.
Because you don't know about clothes.
Not really.
I mean, do you know what you're wearing today?
Yeah.
What is
I'm
it?
Wearing a sun shirt or other. Yeah.
You're wearing a sort of Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, your shorts.
Your little shorts, yeah.
And your calves are out.
The calves are out.
Wow.
Yeah.
They are calves, aren't they?
They're good calves.
Some of the biggest calves I've seen.
Aren't they? Yeah. They're a bit smaller now, I think.
Have you ever tried high heels?
No.
No.
Why would I look good in high heels?
Your calves get bigger. Get stronger.
Strong. Is that what they do? High heels?
You look at women in nice high heels. They've got good calves.
Have they?
Yeah. Yeah. Stop it.
What's a strange conversation we're having here?
I tell you what's a strange conversation.
Go on.
Me thinking about you in high heels.
That was a very strange thought.
Oh.
Get it out of your mind immediately.
I mean, you've got a high instep, haven't you? You've got a high instep on your foot.
Have I?
Yeah. So you... They would have to be sort of clog high heels.
How have we got here? How have we got from John McCurick, the sad news that our friend and guest John McCurick has died.
Yeah.
To me, wearing high heels.
I don't know.
This is a very strange.
It's where we're going.
It's not where we're going. We're going nowhere near it now.
But no, look. I don't know how we got there. But, okay, let's get back to the characters. There's not enough characters on TV.
No, okay.
Okay.
And certainly not enough of me being in high heels.
No, it's an awful fault. Right, listen, we're going to talk a little bit of tennis now. It's Wimbledon. The sun is still shining. And I do hope that Uche Amarco is not wearing high heels. afternoon to you, Uche.
Hello, Uche.
Well, I was going to say, it's a lovely transition from high heels to tennis, wasn't it? Good job, Ben. Good job, Len.
Do you know what? It could be a new game, Uche, that tennis players have got to play in high heels. Listen, just talk to us a little bit about...
Kyrgios.
I watched Kyrgios yesterday. And
he's another one that gives.
He's a character.
He's a character.
And that's probably why we watch him, isn't it, Uche?
Yeah, I mean... It was built as a grudge match between the two of them, and in the first two sets you could see the needle was there, and then in the third set he nailed him with a forehand which he just got his racket on, and not just got his racket on, but he was clearly going for him. He admitted he was going for him afterwards, but what I like to see personally is the way he played in the third and fourth set, where he was focused, got his head down, and was trying to play and was trying to win. We don't need all the antics where he's looking to agitate other people, because that doesn't endear him to anybody, really.
Well, do you know what? The first underarm serve that he played...
was brilliant.
Oh, it was brilliant, because I'm sort of quite keen to see how he does it, because he's bouncing the ball and he's leaning over the ball.
Yeah.
And you think he's going to... But it's such a nice little trick that he does.
Yeah.
And he literally just pops it over the net. But What I noticed was the crowd cheered the first time because we were all waiting for it. When he did it the second time, everyone booed, didn't they?
Well, I mean, English fans, British fans, we're very weird. Why on earth would you cheer it the first time and then boo it the second time? It's the exact same thing.
Yeah. But, we don't know what we want, do we? It's almost like Brexit.
Exactly. Exactly. But and he said afterwards, again, like, I don't know if you... I'm not quite sure if he meant it in jest or not, but he said he did. Once he did it the second time and they booed, he thought, I can't do it anymore because they just don't like it, or he's never going to win.
Yeah.
He does it and they like it, and he does it another time they don't like it. It's like, what can he do? So the fans got in his head, really, by the sounds of it.
The trouble is with him, Mucha, is that we do want to see another McEnroe there. We want to see a little bit of controversy. The trouble is...
But he needs to win.
The way he goes about it is so like a spoilt brat that you end up wanting him to get beat, don't you?
Yeah, and I think he needs to start winning as well because he's not won enough tournaments for all his prodigious talent because he's as talented as anybody, you know, and he could, and the way he plays and the way people sort of react to him, he could take... The sport needs someone like him to take the game to the next level once Federer, Nadal and Djokovic all depart. Yeah. And he's the guy that can do it with his natural ability.
Do you think so? Is he the one to take over? Because, if you put the antics aside, has he got the talent? Because even at one point, I watched his dad in the crowd. Even his dad sort of stood up as if to say,
Come on, Nick, let's leave this now,
you know? But has he got the natural ability to sort of take the reins of those three?
Physically, he's got all the abilities. Mentally, there's the question marks. And until the penny drops, until it just clicks, we're still going to see moments like the first two sets where he's all over the place and he's trying to create a bit of nonsense. But what we saw in the last two sets was perfect. That's what you want from him, where he's committed and he's focused and he's playing his best tennis. And then, but by all means, he needs to work on his game as well because there are a few too many basic errors he made yesterday, especially on his backhand side, which he needs to work on. Mm. But he doesn't practice enough. He said that. Sometimes he just doesn't turn up to practice. How can you do that? This is your profession. This is your life.
I read that he was in the pub the night before till 11 o'clock.
That's ridiculous.
He was in the pub. He wasn't drinking copious amounts of beer, to his credit. But in terms of preparation, it's not ideal. If a football player was seen out clubbing till late... the morning before a game, they'd get hammered for it, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would. They couldn't do it now.
To be fair, Paul Gascoigne was pretty good.
Look at him now.
Yeah, I agreed. Just one more thing, just on Kyrgios. He hit the ball at Nadal, and he meant to hit him, and they said, did you mean to hit him? And he said, were you trying to wind him up? And he said, I don't care. You know, that was the thing. He was trying to. He said, "I'm trying to win, so I'm going to try and hit him with the ball."
It's not an illegal shot, and he didn't hit him directly. He managed to get the racket onto it. Had he hit him, I think he would have apologized. I would have expected him to maybe just put a hand up. But the fact he got a racket to him, he felt clear for the knee, so he didn't have to do it. And he, at that point, he could tell that he'd got to Nadal. He was winding him up a little bit. I don't particularly mind that.
Do you know what? There's one other thing that I noticed in that game was when he went mad at the umpire. I mean, it got quite rude to the umpire, didn't he? To the point where the umpire was... He just sat there and he didn't really want to get into an argument. He started to look the other way. But when they called fault on the... I think it was on the second serve and he walked away from it and then it was actually in, wasn't it?
I think that was it, right? Yeah. Or he said that the point wouldn't be replayed.
Yes.
Yeah.
What did you make of that? It's a bit of a discrepancy in the rules, do you think?
Yeah. Some umpires would give it. Some umpires wouldn't. He has cause to be a bit aggrieved by that. But once it happens, forget about it because the umpire doesn't change the decision.
No.
You know, it's not like they can go to review it and they can change the decision. The decision is final. Take it on the chin. Move on.
Keep
stay focused. Don't let yourself get agitated. And to be fair to him, after he had a little bit of a moan, he got his head down and continued playing again.
He did.
So that's what he needs to do.
There's been a few, a couple of shocks, isn't there? Isner and Chilic are out.
Isner and Chilic are out. In the early stages, team, Zverev and Tsitsipas were all out. So it's been really disappointing in my book in terms of the players that, again, like you, that we need to sort of take over sport. Yeah. They're just not able to stay in the tournament long enough. And it's not good enough.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And what about Andy Murray? So he was a set down. They came back and won. What do you think? Is that a good prediction of what's going to happen, really? Could they go all the way?
Well, he's 100%. He's obviously the best sort of player in the doubles draw, and he's got a world class doubles opponent, doubles player with him. So there's no reason why. I think maybe the first set to get adjusted to each other, and then after that, they were comfortable, really.
Yeah.
And what about Serena soon as well, isn't he?
And Serena again, two world-class players on the same team.
I'm looking forward to that.
Do you know what, though, Uche? I watched the Serena match yesterday, the singles match, and she lost the first set and then come back to win it. But really, her shoulders were really slumped in that first set. I actually thought, oh, my God, we're seeing the sort of collapse of a star here. What did you think of her performance?
She wasn't great in the first set. She hasn't really impressed too much in the tournament in general. But I think she's still not at where she needs to be or where she wants to be, really. She's still trying to get back comfortable with her knee. I think there's also the issue of maybe her motivations are elsewhere. You know, she's a mother now. She's got other businesses, a clothing line. She's married, of course. So she's got all these things on her mind. And it's, in terms of playing tennis, it's taking it on a back burner a little bit. But I think playing with Andy in the mixed doubles, as long as she can stay fit and healthy, I think they could go all the way, yeah.
Well, I tell you what, it's another beautiful day for tennis.
Yeah.
Uche, isn't it? So
yes, I've got my suntan on.
Have you got the Robinsons? Got the Robinsons out and a bit of strawberries and cream?
Strawberries and cream.
Yeah. No pims, I've got to stay professional, boys.
Are you waiting to come onto court now? Are you going to see this afternoon?
Yeah, we'll give clinical and court one action gets underway at 1 o'clock. So we'll have a look at Kevin Anderson, and also around about 3 o'clock, we reckon Novak Djokovic will be on. So what number one, but that should be good too.
I should be looking forward to that when I get home. Uche, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Enjoy the tennis, my friend.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Just want to switch to this story about the graffiti artist known as Banksy.
Who is he?
Has given a glimpse of himself in an unearthed TV interview from 16 years ago. Right there, John. Banksy, graffiti artist.
Yes.
You don't know about him, do you?
Is this really bad, is it? I've never heard of him.
I cannot believe you don't know who Banksy is.
I've never heard of him.
I mean, none of us know Banksy.
I swear to you.
Okay, but you don't know too much stories about him.
No.
About him.
No, nothing.
Okay, so graffiti art.
Oh, but let me just say this. I'm not an art fan.
It doesn't matter about art. It's just about general news, isn't it?
Well, I just switch off when art comes on.
Well, it's not art. That's the whole part about
it. It is art.
He's a graffiti artist, but you might turn up, you might walk down somewhere, and suddenly there's a wall that's been spray-painted by Banksy. And
why is it called Banksy?
I don't know.
Oh, we don't know much about it.
Well, nobody knows anything about him.
Yeah, but why?
He's like the Invisible Man, right?
Why Banksy?
Well, that's what he's called, right? Okay, but we've often I've looked him up a few times. Now, look, whatever he paints or whatever he sprays or whatever he does is worth millions. Okay,
so hang on a minute.
So even if he sprays a wall, okay, what they do, they take the wall down brick by brick.
Yeah.
And put it back together somewhere else, and it's worth fortunes.
Well, so he doesn't get any money?
Well.
How strange.
Here's quite a strange thing about him, right? Okay, it's flown around for years that maybe he is from the band Massive Attack.
Yeah.
Okay? All right? That's what it could be. Robert Del Naja.
Right.
Or Nahaya. Right, okay. Right. From Massive Attack. That's what it's been. We definitely know he's from Bristol for some strange reason.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it has been reported that sources estimate he's worth, he makes a whopping $20 million per year. But I'm trying to figure out how do we know he's making 20 million a year? And where's he getting it from? Yeah. Is somebody paying for it, okay?
All right.
There's a bit of footage that has come about where he's done this interview where he's got a mouth scarf over 16 years ago. Footage was filmed in 2003 ahead of his Turf War exhibition, but then lay in a vault for nearly two decades. He is seen stenciling a black insect onto a wall and painting a picture of a baby with blocks spelling "Kill More." Okay? Both pieces have long been attributed to Banksy.
Right. Hang on a second, though.
Go on.
I've got this here.
Yeah.
Now, in 2010, is Banksy's documentary film Exit Through the Gift Shop made its debut at the 2010 Sundance Festival. And in January 2011, he was nominated... hang on a minute. He was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary. And he was awarded Person of the Year in 2014.
But we don't know who he is.
How can that be? You went there to collect it.
You don't know who he is. Who's turning up? Nobody. Where is he then?
No, this is serious. I'm being serious.
I'm serious.
What's going on?
I don't know. That's the trouble. Nobody really knows.
And but who turned up to get the award? Who did the award go to?
We don't know.
This is madness.
He turned up in with a scarf over his head or something.
Who did the film?
No.
Oh, this is rubbish. There must be, come on.
That he's not.
How can somebody make a film and not be somebody?
He's not there.
How can he not be there? He's made a documentary film.
Listen to me. I phoned him up earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody answered.
Right. Well, he's not going to, is he?
Of course he's not.
He's not there.
He's not there. He's not him. This goes back to that story, John, that fantastic story that Sid Owen told me.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sid Owen from EastEnders.
Oh, I like that one, yeah.
Okay. When he went he went over to France
yeah, that's it.
On a cash and carry, right? He was going over to get a bit of booze on the cash and carry.
Yeah.
And he got on the ferry.
Yeah,
okay. He got on the ferry and a fella spotted him and thought, is that a fella from EastEnders?
Is that him?
And he went up to him, this fellow, so obviously like a young, scrawny fella. He went,
yeah.
Here. Here. And he pointed at him and he said to Sid, don't make out you're you, because you're not you. Don't make out you're you, because you're not you. Right? He couldn't believe that he'd seen Sid from Sid.
But he didn't actually believe that it was a... You're not you, are you?
Don't make out you're you, right? You're not Ricky. Anyway, it's a funny story. So listen, we're going to come back. Let us know. We're putting it out there.
Who is Banksy?
0208 7020 558. Just send us a WhatsApp. Tell us who you think Banksy is. Because he's... Don't make out you're not you. Listen, John, Karen Carney, England Chelsea midfielder, announces retirement. She played in four World Cups.
Right.
And obviously we're going to play Sweden for the playoffs. And this could be her last game. So it's going to be quite an emotional event. Her 31-year-old made her senior debut for Birmingham, aged 14. And went on to play in four World Cups for England and the 2012 Olympics for Great Britain. We are joined by Kieran Tyvam, women's football writer.
Tyvam, isn't it?
Tyvam.
Yes,
Tyvam.
Kieran Tyvam.
How are you, Kieran?
Hello, chaps. How you doing? Don't worry. So many mispronounce my surname. You can join the long list. It's all good.
Yeah. Tyvam. That's correct, isn't it?
Is it Tyvam?
All good. How you doing?
It's a bit of a shame, though, Kieran, isn't it, really, for a last match to be a playoff. I mean, you know, it could have been the final, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Karen is one of those players who's been hugely influential for England for so many years. Like you guys said, you know, played in four World Cups. She was playing at Euro 2005 as a 17-year-old, so she's been around the international scene for a long time.
Yeah, and she's seen a lot of changes, Kieran, hasn't she?
She has seen a lot of change, yeah. I mean, I think Farrah Williams is the only international male or female for England who's got more caps than Karen. I think she's got 143 caps for her country. So she has seen a lot of change, right, guys? You know, she will have been playing very early on in her career in front of next to nobody in terms of the stadiums and very few people watching on TV. And we've seen the figures that have come out during this competition. You know, 11.7 million watched the game against the United States. I think, you know, we've seen a real interest in this Women's World Cup. Karen's one of those players. I've had the privilege of speaking to Karen a few times during my journalism career, and she's very much a team player. And I can only assume that Karen now feels that maybe there are players a little bit younger than her that that maybe you know, she wants to see thrive and develop and moving them forward. And I'd also say that Karen is a very smart individual, very smart player on the field and very good off of it as well. And I think that she probably has a very good media career ahead of her. And, sure. And I imagine that's probably the next move for her.
Do you think that it's a bit of a shame? Obviously, this is probably the most highlighted Women's World Cup that we've seen, that now that the money is probably coming into the game, that she's at the end of her career. I mean, it must be a big shame for her.
Yeah, and I think the good thing for Karen is at least that she's seen some of that. You know, she's reaped the benefits of some of the money that's gone into it and the development over the last few years. And, you know, I think she more than most will have seen both sides of it, as we said. So it is a shame. And as you said beforehand, it's a shame that she kind of goes out having to play for essentially what is a bronze medal match against Sweden tomorrow in Nice, as opposed to that final in Lyon against the Netherlands. But she's been phenomenal for England. You know, I think she, along with Kelly Smith, obviously retired a few years ago, is seen as one of England's most gifted technical players to represent the national team. And she's going to be hard to replace because she's a character off the field as well.
As you mentioned, it looks like she could have a very good media career ahead of her. Somebody who's been in the game that long in men's football, let's say, would be, you know, by now multimillionaire and actually wouldn't have to do anything afterwards. How much money in reality do you think she's earned out of the game?
Do you know what? Genuinely, it's a bit of a closed book, the financial side of the women's game. I wish I could give you a figure, but I genuinely wouldn't want to sort of mislead you by giving something and it being completely completely wrong. I genuinely wouldn't know. I think it wouldn't be enough for her to retire and live a life of luxury. Let's put it that way. Whatever she decides to do after retiring, she's going to have to do something, whether that's coaching, whether that's media. I think it will be a media career, personally. She's already done some bits and pieces on television over the last couple of years.
Well, the upside for it, Kieran, for her, really, is that the game's now taking off. Women's football is now taking off. So now, of course, the pundit thing is could she be on quite a bit of money, really, wouldn't she?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I hope so. I would like to see the media kind of continue on. I think the most important thing, and I've covered women's football for nearly 10 years, and I think what we see is we see a lot of interest during a major tournament. We saw it 2 years ago with the Euros in 2017 when England got to the semi-final. We saw it when we came third in 2015 in Canada. The Olympics in 2012 generated a lot of interest as well, but it tends to fall away a little bit in the months leading afterwards.
Right.
And what I'm hoping is that after this, we don't see that happen. We actually see that momentum continue, and that there's a lot of emphasis on the FA to do that. England have a huge friendly
Kieran,
at Wembley.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay.
Will there be more interest in the league now?
That for me is the defining thing as to how successful this World Cup has been for England. It's not just a case of whether they finish and beat Sweden in Nice. It's what are the attendances going to be like when Arsenal women and Chelsea women and Manchester United and Liverpool and Bristol and all those FA WSL clubs, and not just in the WSL, in the FA Women's Championship as well, which is the second tier, how much of an increase of percentage of attendances are they seeing? And if we don't see it doesn't have to be a huge leap. But as long as there is a leap and there is an increase, then I think we will have seen that the World Cup has left a little bit more of a legacy than maybe some other tournaments have done so. But for me, that's a really important aspect. It's great that the national team is getting interest. I think that we have a big friendly against Germany in November at Wembley Stadium, which will only be the second international that's played there. The last time was in 2014. I think 30,000 tickets have been sold for that one already.
Wow,
I want to see that go up, you know, over 60,000.
Well, obviously, the FA Cup drew in, West Ham Man City drew in 55,000. Just going back to Karen, just so we wrap up on it, she made her England debut 2005, won 143 caps and scored 32 goals.
Wow.
So a pretty decent career, and we wish her well on her retirement. Just going on to the final, Kieran, USA looking like they could easily take this?
Yeah, I mean, if you speak to some of my American colleagues, I've heard predictions of, in some cases, 5-0, 5-1. Wow. They're really confident, some of them.
That is confident.
You know, we saw 4 years ago, you know, the USA, when they're on song, they won that game 5-2 against Japan in the final in 2015, and they were 3-0 up within 15 minutes. Mm. If USA start at a pace, which they have done, I think they've scored inside 12 or 13 minutes in every single game in this tournament. They are fast starters. Mm. The Netherlands are dangerous going forward. They're quick in transition. But I think that there are some vulnerabilities defensively, and the USA will punish teams who are vulnerable defensively. And England showed some cracks earlier on in the competition and weren't punished. They were so in the semi-final. The Netherlands are in a very similar position. I think the USA are used to this situation as well. This is their third Women's World Cup final in a row. This is the first time the Netherlands have ever been in a Women's World Cup final. So it's a case of how do they deal with the occasion. I've been in Lyon for the last week. There are thousands upon thousands of Americans here who are backing their team. And for them, it will almost feel like a home game. I think there are plenty of Dutch here as well. But I think that that support that the US will get will almost act like a 12th player. Mm. And it could well be that's decisive. I don't see anything other than a US win. But, you know, the Netherlands could spring a surprise. Daniela van der Donk, the Dutch midfielder, said in the mix zone after their semi-final win that she doesn't think the US think they're very good. So they're looking to prove a few people wrong, none more so than their opponents.
If we could have got past the States, would we have easily got past the Netherlands?
Easily, I don't think so, but we certainly owed them one. The Netherlands pretty much embarrassed us in 2017. They beat us in the semi-final of the Euros 3-0, and England were nowhere near them. They completely played us off the park. So we certainly owed them one. And yes, I think the biggest test that we faced was the United States in that semi-final. If we'd got to the final, I would have been confident that we probably would have edged the Netherlands and would have been lifting the World Cup, which I know is very sad in hindsight because we're not there. But yeah, I do think we would have beaten the Netherlands.
Mm. OK. All right. Well, with something to look forward to, obviously, we've got the playoff and the final on Sunday. Yes. Thanks for your time, Kieran. Enjoy it and enjoy it. Enjoy this coming season.
Absolutely.
Bell and Sterling on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.